So, Don, your question was actually doctrinally very kind of important. So Don's question was about vijnana, and in the five khandhas that we looked at, vijnana is named as consciousness. As consciousness is anicca, dukkha, anatta, and so consciousness is used in two ways. And this is from Ajahn Amaro and Ajahn Pasano put out a book called The Island, and it is brilliant. It took him 10 years to put it together. And it's everything about Nibbana that you wanted to know from all kinds of interesting angles. And they all, like, they bring in both the Pali Canon, reflections from Lompa Cha, and some reflections from Dzogchen, and some from other Mahayana texts and so on. So it's a brilliant book. It's a kind of reference book. So my little iPad here. I don't have to carry around this whole library. I mean, these are amazing things. I wanted to get hold of Lompa Liam's biography, and I didn't have it, so I just went down there and got it. I mean, it's really because I know in my head where all the books are, right? I know where I can get quotes, and you can do it now. It's just amazing. So it's not quite monk's accessory, but never mind. This is in the chapter called Unsupported and Unsupportive Consciousness. One of the ways in which the Buddha characterized the quality of awareness was to present it as a form of consciousness, vijnana. This represents a unique usage of the term. Customarily, vijnana only refers to the conditioned activity of the six senses. So that's what you're asking, vijnana, right? So it's eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose, tongue, body, and so on, mind. This represents unique usage of the term. However, we also find that the Buddha gives us some adjectives with which to describe it when the term is used in this unique way. So this is the phrase that is kind of controversial, and you only find it a couple of times in the canon, but the thing about, yeah, anyway, so you only find it a couple of times. So if you only find it a couple of times, it gets controversial, right? This is just the nature of... So the this is a very famous line. Vijnanang anidasanang anantang sabato sapang. Consciousness that is signless, boundless, all luminous, is one translation of this expression. You know, so that's different than just eye consciousness and so on. It almost goes without saying that there is controversy in this country, right? Controversy as to the precise meaning of this enigmatic phrase. However, the constellation of meanings of the individual words is small enough to give us a reasonably clear idea of what the Buddha was pointing at. Firstly, we must assume that he is using vijnana in a broader way than it is usually meant. The Buddha avoided the nitpicking pedantry of many philosophers contemporary with him and opted for a more broad brush, colloquial style, geared to particular listeners in a language which they could understand. Thus, vijnana here can be assumed to mean knowing, but not the partial, fragmented, discriminative knowing which the word usually implies. Instead, it must mean a knowing of a primordial, transcendent nature. Otherwise, the passage which contains it would be self-contradictory. And then he goes on to anidasanang, invisible, empty, featureless, unmanifest, anantang, infinite, limitless, and sabatopabang, completely possessed of splendor. So what do you do with that? Be mindful. But realize that there's something about awareness or mindfulness that is not just about focusing on objects. It's about itself, as it were. And that's why a lot of traditions say the mind knowing the mind, awareness of awareness, and you find that a lot. Now, your first question was that what Mahasi Saito method said that you penetrate, what was the word used?
Penetrate the object.
Yeah, so this might relate to that. This is something from Lompo Cha. Lompo Cha, so this is in that same chapter, and this is from Ajahn Chah's biography. Lompo Cha continued on his wanderings looking for peaceful places to practice until one day he reached Bangkok Yao, where he came across a deserted monastery about a half a kilometer from the edge of the hamlet. His mind felt light and tranquil. It was as if there was a kind of gathering of forces. One night there was a festival on in the village. Sometime after 11 o'clock, and this is Lompo Cha speaking now, quote, "One night there was a festival on in the village. Sometime after 11 o'clock, while I was walking Jongkrom, I began to feel rather strange. In fact, this feeling, an unusual kind of calmness and ease, had first appeared during the day. When I became weary from walking, I went into the small grass-roofed hut to sit and was taken by surprise. Suddenly, my mind desired tranquility so intensely that I could hardly cross my legs quickly enough. It just happened by itself." Of course, this is in the context of men who's been practicing a lot. You know, he didn't just kind of come from the pub and then sit down and meditate. So just keep this in mind. It just happened by itself. Almost immediately, the mind did indeed become peaceful. It felt firm and stable. It wasn't that I couldn't hear the sounds of merrymaking in the village. I could still hear them, but if I wished to, I could not hear them. It was strange. When I paid no attention to the sounds, there was silence. If I wanted to hear them, I could, and felt no irritation. Because before this, and he had been meditating and feeling, well, those people shut up, I want to meditate. So he'd gotten through that. So I felt no irritation. Within my mind, it was as if there were two objects standing there together, but with no connection between them. I saw the mind and its sense object established in different areas, like a kettle and a spittoon placed by a monk's seat. I realized that if concentration is still weak, you hear sounds. But when the mind is empty, then it's silent. If a sound arises and you look at the awareness of it, you see that the awareness is separate from the sound. I reflected, how else could it be? That's just the way it is. They're unconnected. I kept considering this point until I realized, this is important. When continuity between things is broken, then there is peace. Formerly there had been continuity, and now from it had emerged peace. I continued with my meditation. My mind was completely indifferent to all external phenomena. And maybe that's what you're referring to in your first question. I'm not sure. It kind of penetrates through the object to see. It was just a thought. Anyway, what I wanted to share with you is like the question on Buddha nature, is awareness Buddha nature? The reason I don't like to say that is because, first of all, I don't know what that word really means. But there are beings realize depth in their practice where awareness is a different word for different people, right? There's a kind of depth of wisdom and insight that comes. And so, but awareness is still the common ground for all of us. And it is the gateway to the deepest possibilities. So we will look at Lompo Liam. Now, Lompo Liam, he is... I got that this morning. Isn't it amazing? Lompo Liam is the present abbot of Wat Bapong, which is Ajahn Chah's monastery. And he is very, very well-respected monk, much loved, and he's a builder. And he, among other things, he's a very good teacher. And last year he was involved in building 3 or 4 meditation halls. And he gets his whole crew of monks who are very dedicated to him and does a lot of building work. But he's also very accomplished. And he was chosen to be the abbot of Wat Bapong, Ajahn Chah's monastery, before Ajahn Chah fell ill. And as you might know, Ajahn Chah fell ill in about 81, 80, and he couldn't speak for 10 years. So he was paralyzed or whatever. And so that went on 10 years. So Ajahn Liam was chosen by Ajahn Chah, I think, a year or two before that to be the abbot of Wat Pa Phong. And he got criticized quite a lot as the abbot because he wasn't as charismatic as Ajahn Chah. I mean, how do you follow Ajahn Chah, right? But he was just very, very strong in himself in the way he presented himself. And there are stories where he's like, he's always tinkering around with stuff, you know, and he's sweeping leaves or doing something, and some posh person comes and says, "Where's the abbot?" He says, "Oh, he's over there somewhere." And the person thinks it's the caretaker. It's kind of lovely stories like that. But anyway, this is so impressive. So, okay, this is, again, the context of a monk that's been quite diligent, but very much involved with the life at Wat Pa Phong and the work and so on. So there's a narrator and there's Ajahn Liam speaking in this. So the narrator. The range retreat is a time when the monks of a monastery usually intensify their efforts and practice. Lompa's high aspirations and motivation led to a powerful experience at the beginning of the rainy season, of which he tells, "I experienced something stranger than anything I had ever experienced before. From the beginning of the rains retreat on up to the second month, I felt great faith, sadda, in the practice. There was no decline, no thoughts of discouragement at all in my practice. The practice went well the whole time, although there were a few experiences of the mind getting involved with desires or defilements. Possessing mindfulness in this way seemed sufficient for providing clear guidelines in the practice. From then on, the feeling of having to think about things in various ways became less. The citta sankhara, the formations of mind, or the thinking mind that goes on into all directions, felt like it had no strength. It abated and retreated more and more until it was in a state which one may say it wasn't dangerous anymore." Narrator, around the middle of the rainy season of the year 1969, Lompu Cha encouraged the monks to practice with special intensity. They weren't supposed to speak to each other, and the communal morning and evening meetings for chanting and meditation were cancelled. Lompu Cha saw that it was the time to give the monks more opportunity to do practice on their own. So Lompo Liam increased his efforts, and as he did so, results became evident. On the 9th of September, around 10 p.m., he experienced an immense transformation in his mind. He had a feeling of extraordinary brightness and happiness, of which he reports, "It is impossible to describe this kind of happiness to someone else. It is impossible to make someone else know and understand it. It isn't the happiness of getting things according to one's wishes, and not the happiness because things are agreeable. It's the kind of happiness that goes beyond these two. Walking is happiness, sitting is happiness, standing is happiness, and lying down is happiness. There is the experience of delight and joy all the time. Furthermore, one is able to uphold the knowledge in one's mind that this happiness arises completely by itself and eventually will vanish by itself. Both sukha and dukkha in an experience like this are still entirely impermanent states. I was able to maintain the knowledge of this fact all the time. In every posture, standing, walking, sitting, and lying down, there was a continuous and equal experience of happiness. The state was the same whether I was doing sitting or walking meditation. If one were to try to describe the mind in this state, one could say there is brightness. But the word bright actually doesn't describe correctly what the experience is like. It is as if there is nothing that can make the mind get involved with anything. This experience lasted for a day and then changed again. Then the mind became utterly peaceful, not at all exhausted, tired, or sleepy, but filled with clarity, radiance, and coolness, imbued with various kinds of delight and rapture. This experience lasted completely without reference to time. It was truly akali ko, timeless. The same feeling continued on through all the four postures. Eventually, I asked myself, what is this? And the answer was, a mode of the mind. It is like this in itself. When there is happiness, we simply take it as happiness. It is simply a matter of happiness. When there is peace, we simply take it as a matter of peace. And we just look at our happiness on and on, and we just look at our peace on and on, unremittingly. Narrator. Eventually, on the evening of the 10th of September, a change to something new that Lompo hadn't experienced before took place. A feeling of weariness, frustration, and fatigue took over. Whenever he sat or walked, he felt sleepy. Even after he got up, after having rested, the tiredness remained. In each posture, he felt completely exhausted. It got to the point where he fell asleep while he was doing walking meditation and ran into some thorns. His whole face became scratched and sore. Quote, at least the sleepiness will disappear now, he thought. But the fatigue continued to remain as strong as before. Still, he endured, telling himself that it is natural to face obstacles in the practice, which to some extent everybody needs to pass. With these reflections in mind, he understood that he needed to look at this tiredness that previously hadn't been present. After all, this fatigue just arose, so it was impermanent too. Using this insight, he attempted to maintain awareness of the sleepiness. On the 11th, Lompo experienced another change, namely a great peace and happiness returned to his mind. In all four postures, there was clarity and gladness. Simply being by himself was very pleasant. Nothing could intrude and stir up his mind. External objects impinging on the mind just couldn't reach it. When working together with the monks and novices during chores, although he was together with others, he felt the same as if alone. He wasn't interested in what they were talking or chatting about. He couldn't be bothered to think much about what was happening at all. And when the chores were finished, he simply went back to his hut. The next day passed with the ongoing happiness and peace continuing as if it was a normal and ordinary experience. With unceasing attention, Lompo continued to look at both his mind and the objects of his mind. When the evening of the 12th approached, he started to question himself. Why do we actually practice? What's all this practice for? And the answer arose, we don't practice for anything. We practice for the sake of practice. Where whatever it will lead to doesn't matter at all. Our duty is to practice. So we practice and try to maintain mindfulness and awareness with it. In each moment, we keep teaching ourselves. Whatever we are doing, we try to have mindfulness and awareness. Whether we are walking to or fro, we keep everything in a state of perfect balance. Finally, I felt I had done enough walking meditation for that day, because I became quite tired and my feet already hurt very much. Get this now. The bones of my feet felt like they were piercing through the skin, as I had been walking the whole day and night without rest. It is normal to experience painful feelings in the body if we overuse a single posture. Talk about overuse. But it is also normal that feelings change again. So I thought, it's really enough walking meditation for today. I went up to my hut, put on my robe with the right shoulder open and the outer robe folded over the left shoulder, sat down facing east, the same direction as Lompo Cha's hut, thought of my teacher, and started meditating. Narrator, the meditation was very peaceful and the same reflection as before came up in Lompo's mind. We don't practice for anything, we practice for the sake of practice. Lompo. Keeping this teaching in mind, I kept on meditating. Normally, I would sit meditation until about 10 or 11 p.m. and then stop to have a rest. But on this day, I continued sitting for about 8 hours without moving or making the slightest change in posture. With this experience of peace, the mind changed. The feeling of peacefulness shot up and pervaded throughout the whole body, as if something were taking hold over it. It felt cool, a coolness that satisfied the whole body, so very cool, an experience of the whole body becoming completely light and at ease. The head felt so cool the whole day and night, as if there was a fan blowing over it, cool, peaceful, quiet, and still. No experience of thoughts at all, and no clue at all where they had disappeared. Everything silent completely. It felt totally quiet. The only experience left was that of utter peace and stillness. The body felt tranquil, cool, and light. This experience continued on throughout the whole year. Did you catch that? This experience continued on throughout the whole year, not just for a day or two. In fact, it has continued on unchanging for many years. All from that one go. There is the state of coolness, as if in the brain, whether sitting or lying down, coolness in every position. All worries, concerns, or similar thoughts from the thinking mind are totally gone. Thinking in this or that direction ceased. All quiet, just like a forest where there isn't the slightest sound of any bird singing. Truly quiet, no wind blowing at all. Just ongoing tranquility and peace. It felt like there are no sankharas, no proliferations of the mind. All the suffering that arises with kilesas or defilements that had bothered me before, the defilements concerning the other sex, or all kinds of ambitions that I had before, I don't know where they all disappeared. Seeing somebody, I just had the feeling of seeing it as absolutely normal. To see a person as simply a person, just that much. No beautiful persons, no ugly persons. People simply would be specifically the way they were. This is the kind of peace and tranquility that arose. I don't know what it was, but I also didn't care what it was. Always knowing it is like this by itself, in just this way. It is like this through peacefulness and tranquility. There isn't anything to be concerned about as far as how various things exist. As concerns dukkha, I don't know what dukkha is like. As concerns laziness, I don't know what laziness is like. Questioning myself about laziness, there wasn't any. Questioning myself about dukkha, there wasn't any. The feeling inside my heart was exactly like this. I tried to recall and pin down that which is called dukkha. What is it? I really don't know. I only know how they discern the meaning in terms of conventional language, because dukkha is just something created by common conventions. When the mind has no dukkha, all conventions whatsoever don't exist in the mind. And the experience of this feeling has lasted on continuously all the time since then. There has been no change all the way up to the present day. The same state still lasts on, and it has been stable, continuous, and without changes.
Wow.
So, I mean, you see the depth of possibility here. So when someone says, is awareness Buddha nature? Say, ooh, wait a minute. What are the possibilities here? So that's just... Now, you could feel very... I could feel very inadequate when I read that. But also I could feel inspired, you know, and I think that's what... That there are beings who are... You know, they're not just trying to become well-adjusted psychological beings. You know, they are like spiritual lions, or, you know, they're really, really profound beings. And they're like, I try to visit Lompo Liam every year, obviously, and I just hang out with him. And he just seems so ordinary. He's just so ordinary. Yeah. And just try to just be there with him. So I was there in January, and he loves forests, and so I got him a book of Ontario mammals. He loved it. He was going through this book. No, look at that, a moose. So it's interesting. You think, well, he must be somehow floating above the clouds. No, he's just mucking in with the cement and what also is interesting about that description is there's no jargon in it. There's no Buddha nature, no enlightenment, no arahant, no sotapatti, anagami, sakat, all that kind of jargon we get caught up in. If you're familiar with the jargon in Theravada Buddhism, it's just straight. This is the way it is now. And this is the way it is. And then you think, wow, yeah, there is real. There are possibilities here. And and you think, like I reflect on, you say, just this constant, you practice for the sake of practice. You practice, things are just this way. It's just peace. It's just bliss. It's just this. And the Thai tradition, Thai forest tradition, always emphasizes that. Pinyang ni ang. It's just this way. Right? Which is, when you do that, rather than just believe in that, there's a difference between sort of just saying it, but actually doing it and seeing how that affects you. That's a kind of ongoing practice that we're all trying to do. It's just this way. Shall we do some sitting? That's called no worries. Which Ajahn Manindo is trying to get all our books onto digital format so you can carry your iPad around to your retreats. Great for me. It's no worries. Lompo Liem, L-I-E-M, if you want to read that.